Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, no matter how contrary that might seem, just like this nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I have a great guest with me today. Gabrielle O'Hare is a personal trainer who's written a book that answers, hopefully, that perennial question I hear from so many women. Why is losing weight so hard when you're over 40? Now, her book is called, aptly, Why Women Over 40 Can't Lose Weight. And now, before you jump to any conclusions, this is not a diet book. Although Gabrielle does discuss food, but no, in fact, she starts off the book by listing the real reasons most of us can't stick to any diet. Here's Gabrielle.
And thank you for saying that it's not a diet book, because I think that's quite an important differentiation. I think we tend to wrestle with the idea of diets, and it can be quite a source of torment that we're constantly sort of trying to eat in a certain way but not being able to manage it. And this was what really fascinated me more than the idea that we should all be on a diet. Okay, so I am a personal trainer, and I had a number of clients who came to me looking to lose weight. Okay, and this was really came out of my observations about why, when I told them how to lose weight and told them what they should be eating and all the rest of it, all just fairly standard stuff, they really struggled with it. And that became really interesting to me, because as I spoke to more women and got to know them, you know, because it's you develop quite a strong trust relationship in that environment, I started to see patterns emerging. And that's where I got this list of six reasons, really, why people really struggle to eat with how they think they want to eat.
Yeah.
And this isn't necessarily in order or anything. This is just the list as they come. And the first one was self-neglect. And for me, that isn't something where we willfully ignore ourselves or don't give ourselves what we need. It's more, and particularly for women, that we are so preoccupied with looking after other people and making sure that they get what they need, we actually forget to focus on what we need ourselves. And we're not even ignoring our own needs. We actually tune out from them and we stop recognizing them. You know, when we've got little children or a demanding boss or a husband who we're trying to be the perfect wife for, we're really hyper-attentive to their needs. You know, a look can come across someone's face and we spring on it because we know it means they need something. So we're really sort of tuned into what everyone else needs before they even know themselves sometimes. Whereas we stop looking after ourselves and we stop noticing what we need. And because we're so busy spinning so many plates, being all these perfect versions of ourselves, we actually run out of time to look after ourselves. And that's where the problem is. So we take shortcuts with our diet. We eat people's leftovers. We have nothing until we're starving, and then we eat anything in sight. So that was really what self-neglect meant. The second one was stress. And I think everyone's stressed these days, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And certainly with, you know, the books about being over 40, as you go into perimenopause and menopause, it's well known that that can be a source of stress in itself, but also it can make it more difficult for you to cope with the stress that you have. And that life stage, a lot of people actually realise they get there, and it's the most stressful time of their lives as well, for many reasons. And stress has a couple of effects. It can affect your appetite. You know, people can eat to cope with stress.
Yeah.
You can feel overwhelmed and therefore unable really to make healthy food choices. You're just going with the easiest options because that's all you've got the capacity to think about. But actually experiencing stress releases hormones into our body that have been linked with increased fat, and particularly abdominal fat, which again is something many people start to recognize around the middle years. So stress can affect your hormones and your fat storage, and it can also affect your food habits. Okay. Menopause then is obviously can't talk about
Yep,
being over
no.
40 without talking about menopause. It's very popular at the moment. And again, people talk about middle-aged spread and tend to associate getting heavier and gaining body fat with the menopause. And as if there's something mysterious that happens to us that suddenly means that our body's completely changed and there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
And there are a few things that are happening there. Some of it's just an aging process. Over time, we gradually become less active. If we're eating the same, that's going to mean that we become heavier.
Yeah.
Over time, our muscles naturally shrink unless we're working to protect them. And that can change, make our metabolism smaller. So again, we don't need as many calories as we're eating. But also, menopause obviously links into stress, I should say. So there's a sort of
Yeah.
messy thing that can lead into all sorts of sort of changes in your food habit. People can find that they start to have more cravings because we get less pleasure from things. People quite often talk about maybe the mood lowering in menopause and life just feeling a bit blur and just not really getting the excitement, and the mojo sort of disappears.
Yeah.
And a lot of junk food, sugary foods can really give us a very intense pleasure spike. And
Yeah.
that can start to become a little bit of a substitute for not being able to feel as much happiness and pleasure from our everyday lives, which is an effect of our hormones changing. And lastly, there is a connection between your body fat can actually produce estrogen. So as your estrogen levels are naturally declining because your ovary production is slowing down, your body still needs it. Estrogen's a really complex hormone that has many, many uses in a body, many functions. And fat is a way of our bodies being able to make up for the shortfall from our ovaries. So we can put down extra stores of body fat to help give ourselves a new supply. And
I didn't
another,
realize that at all. Yeah.
yeah. And another source of estrogen is our adrenal glands. Now, our adrenal glands are the parts of our body which produce stress hormones, but they can also produce a weak source of estrogen, which again can help top up the supplies that we need. The problem there is that they also produce the stress hormones, as I said. So when you get stressed, they default back to their stress hormone producing and lay off on the estrogen producing part, their secondary role, which then maybe puts the pressure on the fat stores to kick up. So there starts to become a hormonal cycle because we don't, or hormonal impact, I should say, because we don't just increase our body fat because we're eating too many calories. Our hormones also play a role in whether we're burning fat, storing fat, and where we're holding on to it as well. So that was the menopause area. And then I think it's true to say that a lot of people just develop over time an unhealthy relationship with food, which we call corners. So again, these all interlink. We make convenient food choices because we're so busy. It's easier for us to slam a pizza in the oven than it is to cook something from scratch. Or we develop habits that are about comfort eating because we're bored, nibbling things because we're there, finishing the kids' leftovers. And these things start small, but really can become a very significant source of calories day in, day out. One of the surprising things that I learned as well was sabotage, which is quite a sinister title. But I also came across a group of women who, in some cases, had very powerful health-related reasons for wanting to lose weight. And it turned out that they were doing everything they could to change their diet, to plan their meals, to educate themselves about nutrition. But husbands, parents, and children even were sabotaging their attempts and putting them under pressure to eat the same as them or buying them treats. And so we are very, very heavily influenced by other people. Sometimes it's just by association and it's innocent. Other times there are people who go out of the way to make sure we don't succeed, but for whatever reason.
Yeah, and you've got a couple of examples of that sabotage in your book, haven't you? You use a couple of case studies
Yes,
to
yes.
show how that works. I mean, maybe give us an example of that just now.
Well, one that sort of stood out for me was again a lady, as I said, who had a health issue that she was told by her GP that losing weight would actually help reduce the medication that she was on. And she was from a very large active a very large social family, and there were lots of family gatherings. And her time with her parents was all about cooking food and preparing these special snacks, and it was just a huge part of her family life to partake in these social environments and eat the food, and really had that food pushed on her quite a lot, and being told, "Oh no, have some more. No, why are you not having this? Why are you not having that?" And really put under quite a lot of pressure to not have a small portion, or not go for seconds, or have less rice or bread or whatever it was, and really found that this was a very frequent thing because of the family dynamic and how they socialized, and was really had a huge impact on her not being able to lose any weight at all, and to the point of going back to a doctor's surgery to go and check her weight to see if she'd hit a target that he'd given her, and actually failing and having her medication changed, which actually had quite nasty side effects as well. So
Oh, what a
her
shame.
parents didn't want, her family, I should say, weren't supportive of her need. They were
Yeah.
more bothered about her not making them seem like they were greedy because they were eating more than she was. So that's a type of dynamic.
Yeah, and there are pressures all over, aren't there? Because you talk about advertising as well.
Oh, and that's huge. I mean, very there's ridiculous statistics that you can't even believe that suggest that we could be bombarded with literally thousands of messages around food all the time. We're constantly seeing messages on our phones, on social media, TVs, billboards, you name it. You walk around the supermarket, a sports shop, anything, anywhere you go to, you'll be going past some opportunity to buy something, to buy some processed food. And those messages are really, really effective, and
Yeah.
we don't realize how susceptible we are to those cues that we're surrounded by telling us to keep eating and, just treat yourself, you've earned it. Be treat wise, there's never anything to say, "Hey, stop."
Yeah.
Because when we spend money on these foods, we make a company money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's some data, it's hard to find it, and it would vary from supermarket to supermarket, but as much as 80 to 90% of the food on the shelves are basically what would be known as highly processed foods, okay, that's of dubious health quality. And that has a huge impact on what we put in our super in our baskets, and therefore what we have in our cupboards, and then what we eat and our children eat.
Yeah. And there's highly processed food. Isn't there ultra processed food as well? Is there a distinction there, or am I wrong there?
No, that's probably me saying highly processed. It tends to be that there's a number of different levels. You've either got completely unprocessed, untouched food, and that's a carrot that's just been pulled out of the ground. Then you've got something that's processed, but not necessarily in an unhealthy way. So that might be churning milk to make butter,
Yes, yeah.
or preserving olives in brine. Then you have things where there are big industrial processes that are being used to make certain ingredients. So refining vegetable oils, stripping out nutrients from, wheat grain, adding fillers, flavorings, bulking agents, and all those sorts of things, which actually take a lot of nutrition out of the food, fill them with artificial additives, and create a long shelf life. And things that would include would be a lot of commercial bread products, noodles, chicken nuggets, pizzas, things that we all really enjoy eating, if we're honest, and are quite hard to resist.
And is it so then those additives that are in the highly processed foods, those are the things which are going to disrupt our body systems, or what? I mean, what is it specifically about the highly processed foods that impact our weight?
Okay, well, one of the way they work is that they're very tasty. So from a marketing perspective, think about a donut. People It's a very well known and very well researched combination of fat and sugar, which is highly palatable.
And we can't resist fat and sugar. I mean, put fat and sugar together,
That's
and you're on a
right.
winner, aren't you?
That's right.
Meringues with cream, pavlovas, that sort of thing. Absolutely
Has
delicious. Yeah.
anyone ever cut a donut in half and then forgotten
No.
about the other half? Or just had a few crisps out of a bag?
That's
But
true.
so these foods are designed to be very palatable, and they do actually work on our brains to sort of light up dopamine receptors. Our brains love a pleasure hit. They love nice things. We eat something like this, we just absolutely bowled over by how tasty it is. And that makes us want more. We can't
Yeah.
get too much of a good thing. So that's
Yeah.
one thing. It's very hard to moderate around those foods because they taste so good.
Yeah.
Second thing that's the second sort of more emerging sort of knowledge about these foods is they're actually very low in nutrition. And sort of thinking now is along the lines that we don't just need calories for energy each day. You're probably familiar with the idea that adults need around 2,000 calories a day. But we now understand that we need certain levels of nutrition every day.
Yes,
And
yes.
that's coming from things like protein, fat, vitamins, minerals, fiber, all these things that are in natural and processed foods. They're not just giving us calories for energy. They're growing our hair, revitalizing our skin, helping our hearts beat, helping our, nails grow, giving us, as well as giving us energy. They're the building blocks of our body, which is constantly working, constantly renewing itself. And if we're not getting enough nutrition, then our body craves more. And if we're eating a diet that's predominantly or based on or heavily skewed in favor of this low nutrition, ultra processed food, we're going to eat something like a pizza that's actually not going to meet our nutritional needs. And our body recognizes that, so wants us to eat more to try and get these nutrients that we're
Yes,
missing.
yes.
But these foods have actually got plenty of calories in, but we're getting shortchanged from a nutrition point of view. So therefore, we're eating more to get more nutrition, but getting too many calories. And that's how they work. That's one of the problems.
Yeah, getting that balance right is so tricky, isn't it? Well, stay with us for more on that in a moment because we have to take a short break right now. I'll be back with Gabrielle O'Hare right after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest, Gabrielle O'Hare, who's written the book Why Women Over 40 Can't Lose Weight. And I was just thinking that it's pretty obvious, actually. Bulking up bulks us up.
It does, because we end up then having too many carbohydrates, and the idea of should or shouldn't you eat carbs and are carbs bad is sort of very it's one of those very controversial things. But if you just take it back simply, if we're eating a diet that's based on cereals and bread and pasta and crisps and sweets and biscuits, then we're eating far more carbohydrates than our bodies can use. And we can't store carbohydrates. And if we're not active enough, we can't burn them off either. The carbohydrates, when we can't process them anymore, get stored as fat. That's how they make us fat.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, coming back to the title of the book, why women over 40 can't lose weight. Some people will say, well, why have you just written a book about women? Surely it's the same for men and women, but it's not, is it?
No. And I mean, really, it was written from just I primarily train women. And one of the things that was maybe different for women was maybe just this emotional baggage that we carry and these multitasking roles that we're in all the time. And there's also the fact that society expects us to be selfless, to do things for other people all the time. You know, we're under an awful lot of pressure to behave in a certain way. And all of those things mean that we just get crowded out of our own lives.
Mm.
I do train some women, and I train their husbands, whose husbands I train, and they have no problem being able to say, well, I need a workout. And on their weekend to look after the kids, they get a babysitter and go for a run. And a mother quite often wouldn't do that. She would be worried about putting on her neighbour or the kids, or there'd be this whole guilt baggage there. And there is also truth that women and men have different relationships with food, and that women actually find it harder to not get pleasure from foods or go without foods that they love. Now, stereotyping, I guess, or generalising would be a better thing, and I'm sure there'll be men who struggle as well. But certainly there is some data that points to the fact that women have different experiences.
You know, what is that? Is that a physiological thing or culture? Where does that come from?
There's a bit of both. There's certainly a bit of both. As I say, I think women have, there's many things I think that put us close to food all the time. You know, a typical thing that I bet many people recognise is you can think about food all day when you have a family and a partner. And women tend to be more responsible than men for the cooking, the shopping, the menu planning. Even if our partners help us, more often than not, we're telling them what to do. So we still have what's called the emotional responsibility for having all these things being done. And I don't know what happens in your house, but I've got a very supportive partner, but he'll think about food when he's hungry. And women tend to be planning in advance and getting everything ready before everyone's hungry. So we're exposed to thinking about food all the time. We probably spend more time in the kitchen. We're surrounded by food. And that can bring up a whole set of circumstances where we're just having to be involved with that more than anybody else in our family.
Yeah.
And certainly there is some physiological changes as what differences as well. Sort of there have been studies done where when men and women are asked to give up their, you know, go on a diet or give up foods that they really enjoy, women have a harder time doing that than men.
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So a bit of both, as you say.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. And so these are some of the reasons why women put on weight, people put on weight, particularly women put on weight when they get older. But you do go into how we can turn that around in the book. And it's a very practical book. And I love the fact that you've laid it out very, very easily. And you've got sort of, you know, goal setting charts and that sort of thing. But first of all, you do tell us of the kind of foods that we should be eating. So give us an idea of what we ought to eat in order not to put on so much weight.
Okay. Well, it goes back to basics. It goes back to just eating natural, unprocessed food. And having a diet that's based as much as you can on proteins, so meat, fish, dairy, tofu, nuts, pulses. You know, a lot of people are increasingly vegetarian and vegan. And it's very important that they get the right sources of foods, fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, whole grains, all the things that are really, that we all really know and are quite boring. You know, there's no real miracle. It's just going back to basics and making as much food as you can from scratch. So that's sort of the first step. The second step, which is quite significant actually, is making sure that we're eating enough protein. Now, as we get older, our protein needs increase. And diets that are heavily skewed towards processed food or convenience foods can be quite low in protein as well. And protein was one of the factors that is thought to be why we overeat ultra-processed foods, because they're low in protein. We need protein. It's really important for our body. And the other thing that protein does, it's very, very good at satisfying our appetite. So when we eat what we would call balanced meals, where we have a good serving of protein with vegetables, a little bit of rice, potatoes, pasta, those things that people enjoy, and some healthy fats, so olive oil, butternuts, things like that, those meals are very, one, they're crammed full of nourishment and nutrition, and two, they're quite slow to digest, so they can sustain us for a long time.
You know, sorry to interrupt you there. It's just very interesting. But what's going through my head is I had, for the first time in a long time, I had a kipper when I broke my fast, right? And I tend not to think that very much goes with kippers other than toast or, you know, bread and butter or something like that. So that's what I had. I had a very gorgeous, juicy, lovely, locally smoked kipper.
Wow.
With an oatmeal roll and butter. And I did throw in some microgreens that I had because I thought I've got to get some greenery down me at some stage, and we'll have a, you know, have a bit of that. And I just finished off a pack that I had. But what I noticed about having that was that I didn't actually need to eat for ages after that. I felt no pangs of hunger. And I'm now realizing it's because a kipper, you know, a smoked herring is high protein and fat as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that the combination of protein and fat is actually very satiating. It's very tasty. It's got a very satisfying texture in your mouth. Mm. So it's not just going to keep you full. It's actually going to be a very pleasurable experience as well. Yeah. And that's important.
So
these things are the slow to digest, which stabilizes your blood sugar, which then stabilizes your energy, which gets you off this sugar cravings bandwagon. I would imagine if you'd have broke your fast with a bowl of Rice Krispies or a couple of rice cakes or a croissant, you'd have had a very different experience in terms of how long it took you to feel hungry again.
Absolutely. I know that I would. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You probably would take a couple of hours before you were not just hungry, but ravenous to distraction. And this is what's happening when people sort of we eat things that are convenient, not because we're lazy or don't care about our bodies. It's because we're presented with these options that are real time savers. Okay. So we're having a piece of toast because it's just an easy thing to do in the morning. But that's why we're starving later on. And that's why we can find ourselves in the office or at a petrol station. And we haven't got any choice except to go and have more of the same. And we end up in the situation of eating multiple times a day because the food's giving us, you know, a sort of an energy roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And we go in between sort of, you know, being starving all the time and having to keep eating. Whereas when you go back to eating nutritious meals that are well balanced in protein, that changes. Then it becomes a lot easier if you are someone who's trying to lose weight to resist the biscuits, to resist the sweets, because you're not starving anymore. You can't resist those things when you're starving.
No, it's true. And I've experienced that as well. You know, if I sometimes go through phases when I eat biscuits. I don't actually have any biscuits in the house right now. You know, I have crackers, but no biscuits as in, you know, packets of digestives or whatever.
To dip in the tea.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I've not got any of that. And I notice the difference when I do have those things in the house. And because they're in the cupboard, then I'll eat them.
Yes, that's right. Yes, they're there. So we do. That's how we work.
Yeah, exactly. But if I don't have them, and if I'm eating much more sensibly, what's that? But, you know, eating much more appropriately for me, then I don't get the cravings for them at all. I have no sense at the moment that I am missing dunking a rich tea or a digestive into my tea right now.
Yeah, you've forgotten about that, haven't you?
Yeah, I've forgotten about that. Yeah. Yeah.
So no willpower needed.
No willpower needed
because it's not there. It's not on the radar. Yeah. It doesn't exist.
Exactly. And so, you know, you talk about what to eat, and but you're also in here, and you have a, you know, some sample menu ideas, you know, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and stuff like that. But you also talk about exercise, because mm-hmm. we also have this belief that if we exercise lots, then we're going to automatically lose weight. Is that true?
No, it's not true. The fact is, I mean, and you know, this is, exercise does burn calories. That is a fact. Exercise also can build muscle if you do the right exercise. And that's a fact. The problem is, we don't know exactly how many calories a run round the block would burn. And it tends to be fewer than we think. Mm. And whereas eating, we tend to eat more than we think. So there's very rarely sort of a weight loss benefit from just exercising, okay?
Yeah.
And the problem is as well, because we've associated exercise with calorie burning, it's almost ruined it for us. It stopped us from being aware of the real benefits of exercise, which for people who are tired, people who've got low energy, are absolutely life-changing, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of a short walk around the block if you're feeling overwhelmed or feeling sleepy, you know, and tired, can boost your energy straight away.
Yeah.
If you're exercising for weight loss, you might exercise your socks off and do hours in the gym and never get any reward for that. Whereas if you're exercising to make yourself feel better, to make yourself sleep better, to lift your mood, you'll get a benefit from that literally halfway through your walk.
Yeah. And that's not to say that, you know, people who are building muscle mass and that sort of thing, or who are really honing in on certain exercises to give them a six pack or that sort of thing, you know, that kind of works, right? Yes, if you do it enough.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
But it's not going to necessarily make you lose weight or get rid of, you know, get rid of that extra. Yeah.
So in my professional role as a personal trainer, I've had many women come to me who think that if they come to a personal trainer once a week, that's all they need to do to lose weight. And I tell them that's not true. Yeah. You know, if weight loss is your goal, this is where exercise is really important, or it's really important to think about exercise from the perspective of what your goal is. If your goal is to lose weight, then the first thing you have to do is think about food. If you want to build muscle, and the very good reasons why you should build muscle, then you should be doing exercise, and certain types of exercise are better at building muscle than others.
Yeah.
What one interesting thing that exercise does do, actually, if you are dieting, is help to protect against muscle loss. Because when we go on a diet and eat fewer calories than we need, we don't just tap into our fat stores, we burn muscle as well as fat.
That's right.
And anyone of any age, and particularly women over 40, and men actually, because men also lose muscle mass as they age. If you're going to go on a strict diet and lose a lot of weight, you're also going to lose a lot of muscle. And less muscle means you're going to be weaker. So that's really something to avoid at all costs. And so if you exercise, and particularly do strength training, which is using weights or body weight to build muscle, whilst you're on a weight loss diet, then that's going to help protect against muscle loss. You'll still lose a little bit. You know, when they've done studies on this, a little bit of muscle gets lost, but it actually helps to shift the balance so that more fat is being lost and more muscle is being preserved. So that's a really important thing to be aware of for anyone who does feel that they need to lose weight. You don't want to be losing muscle after 40, male or female.
No, and let's just say as well here that when you're talking about, you know, using weights, we're not necessarily talking about doing the strongman thing in the gym with, you know, a huge, very heavy weights and lifting them, you know. We're talking about just some resistance exercise, really, aren't we?
Yes. I mean, the key thing to get to that you try to achieve when you're lifting weights to build muscle is that when you're doing exercises, so you tend to do exercise in what's called repetitions. So if you were doing a bicep curl, you would be doing one set of bicep curls, which would be about 12 repetitions. Mm. The guide is that you would pick a weight that's heavy enough to challenge you quite hard by the time you're up to 9. But you could keep going for 12 and then you've had enough and you put it down.
Yeah.
So you do have to challenge yourself. To begin with, it doesn't really matter. You want to make sure that you understand the technique and do that correctly and build up slowly. But you want to work up towards challenging yourself. definitely you're not going to end up being a muscle bound person unless you put ridiculous amounts of effort into both your exercise routine and your diet. So those sorts of changes to your muscles can be achieved with a lot less work than you think. And when they do studies on this, and you know, the studies have been done on women in the 90s, you know, just two strength training sessions of, you know, sort of 6 to 12 key exercises twice a week is enough to increase muscle mass and also bone strength.
And bone health is really important as we grow older, as I'm sure we all know. Well, it's time for us to take another short break right now. Back with more after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bar gum.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today, Gabrielle O'Hare, who's written a really useful book for women over 40, and I think younger women too, probably. Now, we've talked about a number of issues around weight gain in middle age and later years, but I put it to Gabrielle that there isn't really a one-size-fits-all answer.
Absolutely, yes, very much so. And that would be the same, I guess, with any of these things. It is about finding the food that works for you, the exercise that works for you. But certainly, it's good to just become aware of stress, because the problem with stress is it builds up gradually over the years. And quite often, one thing gets added into our lives and something changes, or work changes, or kids grow up, or parents get old. There's a whole raft of things, and our responsibilities can gradually grow. And we're very good at adapting. And I think women are fantastic multitaskers. They really feel that it's an important part of their identity to be able to cope with everything, you know.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And we don't realise how much the stress that we're under is creeping up. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. And that's something that we just need to be aware of. And this was one of the reasons that, that in terms of what changes when you're over 40, women who are younger had found it easier to lose weight and go on diets. When they were younger, women found it easier to go on a diet and lose weight, and they would find that they were doing the same thing when they were older and it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And the thing that you just need to dial in when you're older is your sleep and your stress, because of the connection with your hormones. And so you're not as resilient, can't get away with as much, I hate to say it. And that's why I focused so much on stress and sleep in the book, because it's more than just changing your diet. Cutting calories and doing, you know, 6 HIIT workouts a week is actually another source of stress on your body. So this is why these old, you know, ways of thinking about weight loss, of being starving and sort of working yourself into the ground in the gym, are actually counterproductive, because they are stressful. If you have a very stressful job, a very stressful life overall, and then you're trying to starve yourself, then you're just putting yourself under very, very difficult conditions that's not going to work.
Yeah.
So you really need to be open to looking at the amount of stress that you're under and seeing what you can do in your life to alleviate that stress or at least balance it out.
Yes, and you talk about breathing exercises, about all kinds of different methods that you can use to just reduce that stress, yeah.
Yes, breathing, mindfulness, doing hobbies. You know, if you can sit and do knit or paint or garden, you know, for an hour, that means that your brain switches off. Yeah. Then that is a stress balancing exercise because you're in a relaxed state. So, you know, mindfulness isn't for everyone. Meditation isn't for everyone. It's something I personally struggle with. So there's not a one size fits all. It is just finding things that give you a break from those incessant thoughts and that busyness that we can very easily fill our days with.
Yeah, emptying your brain. Knitting's great, actually. And the other thing, of course, is to have a pet. You know,
yes.
A cat purring on your lap.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Nothing works, but more than, yeah, that's just perfect for me.
Yes, and that's why that's, you know, a very individual thing. You know, everyone knows what's going to relax them. For some, the pressure of having to sit and meditate with nothing in the brain is a stress to someone, or feeling that they should be doing that. You know, we put ourselves under pressure to be doing loads of things. You have to find your own thing that allows you to balance. But I think once you start to think there's a concept of being in stressful environments and then balance it when you're not in a stressful environment, you then can start to think about how you shift the balance for you and what types of activities that you can build into your life that help to change that suit you.
Yeah. And of course, in your book, you do have charts and you say chart your progress, you know, so that you know what you're doing and what works and what doesn't, because it won't all work, and you know, you have to find out what works for you. So make a list. I've actually started recently writing down what I eat every day, and I've never done that in my life, but because of certain intolerances, I just decided, right, I'm gonna just keep a note and I'll see if, you know, I react after eating whatever I've eaten in the day. But you know what the side effect of that is? I see how much I've eaten.
Mm.
And I look at that list and I think, actually, that's quite a lot.
Mm.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew I was eating that much? Now, you know, I don't feel I'm overeating. And I don't eat over-processed food, highly processed food, as a general rule. Although, you know, we can never rule all these things out, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, we're human.
Yeah, we don't have to be perfect.
Don't have to be perfect, exactly. I've let go of that one a long time ago. But what really fascinates me is the list. Whereas I might think back on, you know, normally think back on what I've eaten and think, oh, I don't eat very much, you know, I'm not a big eater. But when I actually see it written down, I think, oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, there's quite a lot there. The good sign is that when I look at the list, I think, well, there's actually a lot of nutrition in there. That's good nutrition. But I am seeing how I am actually eating more than my brain is telling me that I'm eating.
Absolutely. Because so much of what we do with food and eating habits is unconscious.
Yeah.
You know, and that writing down or journaling can be a really powerful tool. I remember working from home, it was pre-lockdown, and I just noticed that was in front of the fridge. I didn't even know how I got there. I really didn't think, I just was like, why am I, and I'm looking for something to eat, and I didn't know what I wanted or why I wanted. And I noticed a pattern starting to develop where I just would find myself in the kitchen looking for food, and I wasn't hungry. And I did a little bit of journaling to try and think, what's going on? What am I doing? And what it turned out for me was, if I was doing something at home on my own for work that I found difficult, that I had to apply myself or think about, I got this really uncomfortable sort of anxiety. I didn't have a colleague to ask because I was working for myself, and I was struggling to maybe do something I didn't like my accounts or something that just made me feel a bit, you know, uncomfortable. And what I was doing was, instead of actually being able to work through that discomfort, I was trying to eat it and distract myself from feeling uncomfortable.
A kind of displacement activity.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there was no hunger. You know, I wasn't even really thinking, oh, just fancy a biscuit, or, There was no craving like that. I just created this automatic distraction technique, mm-hmm. which just so happened to involve reaching through my cupboards to find something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So how many times a day did you work where you struggle with? You know, you can suddenly find that you're eating all day long because you sort of can't quite figure out a work problem. And mm-hmm. I only was able to identify that by journaling. And so that's part of it, you know, what I sort of encourage in the book is to try and sort of explore what's behind these habits. What are your reactions? You know, for me, when I was able to recognize that I was struggling with the work, then I could think, okay, so I don't need a handful of nuts or a spoonful of peanut butter out of the jar. Maybe I just need a break. Yeah. Maybe I need to ring someone up and get some advice or
go for a walk, write
a list, you know, do something that's actually going to help tackle that problem. Because all I was really doing was walking away from it and sticking my head in the sand, or more realistically, a jar of peanut butter. And mm-hmm. that's what was happening. And that was a journaling, writing down exercise that helped me spot that.
It is interesting, isn't it? So much goes on that we're not actually conscious of.
That's right. A lot
of it is subconscious, yeah.
Mm.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. There's a lot in there, and I do recommend the book. And at the end of the book, so you haven't left people high and dry, you have a chapter, or a part five is resources. And by resources, you mostly have recipes.
Yes.
And recipes for things which are good for you and which, you know, won't, you know, impact your weight as much as ultra processed or highly processed foods. And I've looked at some of these, and there's something for everybody in there, whether you're vegetarian, meat eater, or not meat eater, or vegan, whatever. There's plenty, plenty in there. And then, you know, you've got tables as well. You've got vegan protein sources. You've got a table of protein in food. So you can work out how much protein is in different foods, which is useful if you want to increase the protein in your diet, right?
We don't know, do we? We haven't got a clue how much protein we should be eating, and we can't really see it from the food that we're having. So it's just helping people to get a little bit of information about what they need to have and where they can get it from.
Yeah, exactly. And
we're not too heavy going, hopefully.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you say making your own meal, start with protein. And then mm-hmm. add unlimited vegetables. Well, nothing wrong with that in my book. That sounds like a very good idea. And then add bulk with pulses and starchy carbohydrates. Make tasty with fat, add texture and taste, and check the calories. I mean, all very, very reasonable things to do. Great idea. Oh, and you've got equipment as well that you can use. And so, you know, dumbbells. Pairs used for arm and shoulder exercises. I was using that myself last night because, you know, I like to keep everything working freely because I'm sitting at a computer all day. You outline the equipment, what it's good for, good places to buy from, links to websites. Great. I mean, fantastic resource. So I do heartily recommend it. And if people want to buy your book, presumably it's at all major outlets, including online.
Yes, it's on Amazon. So if you look on Amazon and just put the title in, Why Women Over 40 Can't Lose Weight, then that will come up there.
Fantastic. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you and speak to you, or, you know, see what you're up to, maybe, you know, attend one of your classes or hire you as a personal trainer, where do they find out about you?
So I have a website, which is GabrielleOhare.com. So you'll find plenty of information on there about me, about training, and lots more free resources, actually, that people can look at and use just to help them with their own journey to just improve their health and well-being.
Fantastic. I think that's really great. And we need a lot more of that. But also, you know, it's at the end of the day, we've got to be kind to ourselves, right?
Yes.
And not beat ourselves up over whatever we think that we're doing right or wrong, you know, and whatever we weigh. And, you know, just as a personal note again, I don't have scales in my home.
No. I
never weigh myself.
Do you know, I do a little bit of one-to-one coaching with people as well. mainly around specifically on diet outside of the personal training. And one of the things that's just been the most amazing for me is people start off by being worried about the weight, and then they get to a point where they really don't care. Because what's more important is having some acceptance of ourselves, yeah, and eating a healthier diet and doing exercise just because it makes us feel better. And when you end that mental battle with guilt and food and what you should be eating or what you should have done, or you should be doing something more than you've got time for, then that is so freeing. And that's really the goal of that book, is to get some freedom from that and just put in some really easy, common sense pillars for a healthier life, and set it, forget it, get on with doing nice things.
Oh, that's so brilliant, Gabrielle. Thank you so much. What a great way to end. Thank you very much for coming on the show again. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I've learned quite a lot as well listening to you talking about all of this. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wow, I learned a few things there, and I hope you did too. I'd have loved to have talked with Gabrielle all day, but sadly, that's all we have time for. I hope you'll join me here on Alchemy 101 and UK Health Radio again for more inspirational guests. Now, if you're listening to the podcast version of this show and you like what you hear, I'd love it if you could subscribe and share this episode. It would be amazing if you could leave a review too. Remember, we also have a sister publication, Health Triangle magazine, so do check that out at ukhealthradio.com. And did you know that I now co-host another show, also here on UK Health Radio, with Dr. Mark Goulston, the author of a bunch of books, including one called Just Listen. Our show's called Hurt Less, Live More, and it's a place for open and often raw but uplifting conversations with some fantastic guests. So do check us out. But for now, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.